Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies, on this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Dr. Alan Goodwin, and he's back on again. And in this capacity, we are going to be talking about his book, Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind, Bringing Mindfulness to Your Cosmetic Procedure. Now, he and I talk about how popularity of cosmetic procedures have increased almost double since the pandemic. And we talk all about how it's easy to think that a cosmetic procedure is going to change your life drastically, but you're still the same person on the inside. And we talk through the concept of, what is your relationship with yourself? What do you want this cosmetic procedure to do for you? And is that something that perhaps, along with the process of going through the cosmetic procedure, you could work internally as well to make sure that that outcome of your procedure also helps you to better yourself, I guess, improve your relationship with yourself and as a whole, work on you from within. So this book by Dr. Alan Goodwin, The Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind, really is meant to be a therapy tool. It could be used independently. You could use it. Honestly, I found reading it, I could use it without even needing to do a cosmetic procedure. It's a great therapy book in and of itself. He gives a lot of tips in it. But the thing I want for anyone who's debating or thinking about a cosmetic procedure to know about this book is that it can really help you to identify that background within you. Why do you want this procedure? What is it going to do for you? And might a perspective of diving deep and looking at your relationship with yourself help you to get the best outcome from your cosmetic procedure? Now, Dr. Alan will tell you that he's not there with this book to talk anyone out of the procedure. His goal is to help you to get the best outcome possible. Because if you want to change yourself from the outside, the best results come from changing yourself from the inside at the same time or beforehand. Now, Dr. Alan Goodwin has a lot of great tips. And so let's just jump into the podcast so you can hear from him all about what his book has to offer, but even a little bit more insight into what kind of things you have just waiting for you inside you to help you along your journey. Let's jump into the podcast. Hey, health junkies, I have Dr. Alan Goodwin on again today, and I am excited because we are actually going to be talking about his book, which is something that I find, you know, not many people talk about the psychology behind plastic surgery and any kind of augmentations we do to our body. And so his book, Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind, is a fabulous book. I had the chance to read it, and today we're going to be talking through some of the tidbits in it, so you'll see me kind of referencing the book. So, Dr. Alan, welcome back to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thanks, Janine. I'm really, really looking forward to talking with you again.
So I, of course, wanted to have you come back on because we were getting into some really good stuff. And I think part of what my podcast has missed for a while, and now, of course, why I'm doing these Wednesday podcasts, is really bringing out folks' exploration into themselves and kind of figuring out, who am I? Why do I want to do what I want to do? And really connecting, because I'm sure you've seen as much as I have seen that a lot of us are really disconnected from ourselves.
For sure. Yeah. And how you feel about yourself and how you treat yourself. I mean, if you're disconnected to yourself, you don't do as good a job at recognizing when you're not treating yourself well. And a lot of the time in therapy, it's that simple fundamental idea that we're talking about. You're being so unkind to yourself when you're doing this is something that a lot of the time applies in therapy.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if I look at it, you know, obviously I'm a woman. I don't know if women or men are worse on each other. I've never really had a conversation with too many men about, you know, what do you say to yourself, things of that nature. But I do know from personal experience with myself and other women that we say things to ourselves that we would never dare to say to anyone else on this earth. Do you find that pretty common against, you know, across the board for everybody?
Yeah, because we're raised that way. We're raised with those voices. So that's where that there's an exercise in the book, The Wise Inner Mind.
Yeah.
It's also the supportive inner voice, in mind or voice. The idea of it's not, some a lot of these things sound corny, but I think these simple ideas that a six-year-old would get a lot of the time are the most elegant and helpful to use because you can remember them easily. They can be in your back pocket. So the idea that, you know, would you react differently in a stressful situation, like when someone's treating you badly, when someone's being rude to you? Do you react differently when you have a really good friend with you or someone who really cares about you, who's reminding you just by their presence, also by their reactions, that mm-hmm. someone's on your side? Because one of the things that happens, like instinctively, when someone treats us badly, even if they're a total stranger, is we question ourselves. Mm-hmm. We look at ourselves. It's mm-hmm. it's a human reaction. Mm-hmm. We're pack animals. So mm-hmm. if something goes wrong, if someone barks at us, you know, we're supposed to question, what have I done? And if you've got one pal next to you, you know, it just makes all the difference in the world. Someone to say, yeah, they were struggling, try not to take it so personal. Now that's not always enough, but oftentimes in psychotherapy, what we're working on is why. You know, why is your voice inside so much louder than the one of that friend that could be inside you? Who are you walking around with every day?
Yeah. And I find that fascinating. You know, something you mentioned is having a friend with you can make it easier, but not having someone with you. This makes me think about social media and the impact that social media has on us in terms of how we look, comments people say. I have had to put myself in check quite a few times for what people say on my comments. And, you know, it is hard because you do question yourself. You do go like, oh, am I really that, you know, someone commented once about my hair. And I was like, oh, is it really that bad? I didn't realize, you know, so you really start to pick on yourself and pick out those things. And of course, social media being you're on your own there. I'm guessing you also find that being quite a factor for a lot of people in the social media.
Yeah, I mean, it's, having... oh yeah. And the book is all about body image, right?
Yes.
And how we feel about it. And we all have parts of ourselves that, you know, we've always wanted to change or some that we haven't, you know, always wanted to, but social media is this, you know, really critical microscope that so many people are exposed to now. And I think, you know, what you said a minute ago, we say things to ourselves that we wouldn't say to other people. I yeah. have struggled with something as a therapist. And it's this, I really don't think that's true. Ultimately, I mean, there are a lot of people who are really nice people and they're really hard on themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's tough not to agree with exactly what you said.
Yeah.
And it's not always a good intervention with those people to say, no, there's a pretty nasty part of you toward other people too that we need to get in touch with. That's a real delicate communication to have with a really nice person because it's hard to find it. But I do think we have a sort of sense of integrity about mm-hmm. that stuff. That if you know, if I'm thinking, I'm trying to think of a way to say this that's appropriate in this setting. If I'm really critical of my butt, mm-hmm. my big butt, you know, I am going to be thinking things when I look at other people, even if I don't say them, mm-hmm. you know, and even if I do it in what sounds in my mind like a compassionate way, I think if we're really harsh toward ourselves, there's going to be a harshness somewhere in there. So that's where I think the mindfulness can be really powerful. One of the ways I talk, I think in the book, but all the time with clients about is, you know, if you're going to have trouble being kinder to yourself, one way to start is by really noticing how you're treating other people. Really be intentional about not even thinking those really harsh things. And when you do, notice it and try to reframe it. Try to somehow restate it. so that you get used to being kinder, not only to other people, but to yourself. You can practice on other people first.
Yeah, I didn't really, you know, it makes sense. I'm thinking about it now. I'm going, okay, if you're judgmental with yourself, sometimes you will judge other folks, like you were saying, in terms of certain situations. And maybe if you're resonating kind of with something like the butt, for example, this is something that I guess I didn't really think about that before, really, is that not only do you judge yourself, you judge others when you're in a state of internal turmoil with, I would say, with yourself. I just talked.
We've all got rules. we've all got rules we walk around with,
right.
And we've all got like philosophies. You know, it's not okay to be sloppy. It's not okay to be lazy. It's not okay to be fat. Mm-hmm. It's not okay to be short. You know, whatever. It's not attractive to be tall.
Mm-hmm.
Either you believe it or you don't. If you're beating yourself up for your height, I think you just really need to challenge yourself. Is it really true that you're not doing that to other people too?
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Okay. So I know you have a section in the book where you are working on self-talk, and I was kind of flipping through trying to find the exercise that you had, because I totally dog-eared it. There's one about the mirror test, but I don't think that's where I'm headed. There is back here. I'm going to pull it up. There it is. Found it. So converting negative self-talk into positive self-talk. And we have the situation, the negative, the positive, and the alternative self-talk. Now, some folks might be like, okay, how do I do this on the fly? How does this work? I'm guessing it really involves some practice over time.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
And you know, that's why some people do these things after sessions, and they bring them to the next session. Throughout the book, I talk about how, whether it's a journaling exercise or an exercise like you're describing, you can bring it to any therapist, and they should be able to work with it. Because what you're doing is just what we just talked about. You're just re-scripting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons it's difficult to change, mm-hmm. you know, the tools in therapy are simple. They should be simple, because changing is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons it's difficult to change is you can think of yourself like an actor, that I may be playing a role that's exhausting, but at least I know my lines.
Mm-hmm.
At least I know how to behave in different situations. I may be beating the hell out of myself, you know, like when I'm in public, but how else would I be, like at a food court? I've never been different at a food court or in the mall or anywhere where other people are noticing me. You know, there's an appearance self-consciousness measure, which is just a simple set of questions that helps readers assess, how often am I sort of holding a mirror up in front of myself when I'm around other people and really being critical of myself? I had a client one time say, you know, she was at this bar, and it's a gay bar in West Hollywood. And she was saying, it was so stupid. I felt like people were looking at me and judging me. And it's like, you know, everyone's with their friends. They're not looking at me. And I said, well, yeah, you're right. But, you know, you were right then too. I've been to that bar. There are going to be people who are going to look at you and judge. There's no question. There are always going to be people out there who, you know, we can deal with that by recognizing they're struggling. They're being very critical of themselves. And if they're being really harsh toward you, we can understand that it does say a lot about them. But you and I really should wrestle with, you know, what are they poking? What bruise are they poking? There's something you're coming there with that is about how you feel about how you look. That's what we have control over.
Mm.
And so it sounds good to say, yeah, everyone's busy with their own friends. They're not looking at you. I don't think it's accurate. And in the therapy, it's not going to be helpful if we're not wrestling with that inner voice that recognizes there are going to be some, you know, unkind people out there.
I like that you mentioned that, because I do find that in the therapy realm, there is the concept of sunshine and roses. Let's put it that way. That, no, don't think that, that no one's looking at you, no one's paying attention. You know, it's kind of, I mean, I think I've heard that a lot over the years in terms of multiple things to somewhat make me feel better. Let's put it that way. But you're right. Any bar, people are looking. That's why they're there. You know, and I feel like, okay, there's that situation. And then there's the grocery store situation, you know, folks in the produce department versus folks in the Cheetos and popcorn department. You know, we have all of those different things that are happening. And I think it's great to recognize that that maybe they are. But the important thing, and I'm guessing this is where you kind of go with all of this, is being able to be okay with that. And yeah. I can see that being hard. And this is kind of where it goes back to the whole concept of plastic surgery and how far do we go, and are we doing it for ourselves, or are we doing it for those people that we have not been able to shut down the feelings about them judging us or looking at us, kind of a component. I don't know. I'd love to hear you speak to that.
You know, definitely. And I think that's why, you know, finding the right therapist can be difficult, mm-hmm. because you need someone who you really respect, and someone who's going to, you know, add value to your thoughts that you already are having. And a lot of the time, what we're doing is really wrestling with difficult situations. You know, I said something to a client once that he could say to his girlfriend when they were in a conflict, and we've been working together a while, and he said, "That is like the worst advice I've ever heard." And I said, "Why do you say that?" He said, "Because she's going to explode if I say that to her." And I said, "Oh yeah, no, we should talk about that. I'm not talking about," I said to him, "I wasn't talking about what's going to be effective in calming her. I'm talking about a way for you to manage that situation. I don't know that there's anything that's going to mollify her in that moment. The question is, you know, what can you do in that moment?" So a lot of the time, what the therapy is about wrestling with, like, the current idea. You know, when you're swimming, you know, you have to factor in the current. If you're swimming in the ocean and there's an undertow, and maybe you won't go swimming, but if you're going to decide to swim, you're going to be more effective, like getting back to the shore, if you factor in the current, you know, mm-hmm. if there is a current. And a lot of the time in life, there's a current. That's what that whole Buddhist idea is about, that the struggle of life is unavoidable. And I don't like, it's one of the ways I don't follow what some Buddhists say, is I don't like the idea of saying that we're suffering all the time in life, because I think the message gets blurred and people react negatively to it. Like, I'm not suffering all the time. It doesn't make sense to me. Right. Another way of saying it is we struggle all the time. We even struggle to hold on to good things. So even when good things are happening, there's a struggle going on. But the people who suffer are the people who don't embrace and accept that struggling is an inherent part of life. Mm-hmm. The people who are fighting that current are not going to enjoy swimming instead of working with the current.
I think that's really good insight. And probably one of the things I could say is that I find that somewhat in the health and wellness industry, there is this common theme of, if you're struggling, it's bad. If there is some tension, if there is this confusion, you don't know what to do next, you're trying to find your place, that it's bad. We should all be peaceful, happy all the time, copacetic individuals. And I feel like that's a problem. That's a little bit of a problem. I have a problem with that.
Yes, for sure. And I come at this, you know, I'm a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I'm a psychologist, but I'm a lawyer. I was a lawyer first. I was drawn to law first. So I have like a BS meter that I think is different than a lot of psychologists anyway, let's say.
Yeah.
And like when I listen to Eckhart Tolle, I think he's great. I don't recommend him to clients when I'm introducing mindfulness, because they'll say stuff like, you had a great psychotherapist on recently from England, Shears, I think is his name.
Shires.
And who I think said some, you know, beautiful stuff. But a lot of his stuff sounded like Eckhart Tolle's, and that's not at all a criticism, but the idea of like, why are you self-conscious? You've got to come to this idea that there is no self. There is no self. I get it. It's a great idea. It's a great concept. And it fits within the mindfulness world, which I'm, you know, a part of and believe in. But people's BS meter is going to go off when you say that to them, because most people, I think, or most people in my life and that I was raised by and that I still live with, will say, what are you talking about? Of course there's a cell. I was embarrassed as hell when that happened, when such and such happened, or I would never go out of the house looking like that person did, or like I did yesterday, or how could I let that happen? You know, they do go through the world with that challenge, and they're really not prepared to let go of that. That doesn't resonate for them. So we have to find some other way, I believe, to communicate it to them. It's about what tools you're going to use. And that's why not every psychologist or therapist of any kind is going to be helpful to everyone.
Sure. You know,
there are people who will do well with that message, but I find for me, that's not the way that I communicate it.
Yeah. I think it's important to recognize that. And definitely folks who are listening right now, I like to present different types of therapists, different types of thought process, different types of breathing techniques. I mean, you name it, I'm bringing what I can to you, because I think it's very important to be experienced with, have experience and be exposed to everything that's out there and find what your groove is and what you resonate with. And in particular, you know, one of the things that I really like about your approach, Dr. Allen, is the realism that's there. And this concept, you know, like you were saying, folks you live with the self-identity, you know, that's not going to go away. I mean, my father's 86. Trying to talk to him about what I do, I'm still a voodoo doctor who puts needles in people. It's, you know, it's very hard for certain generations too to think about this type of thing. And I don't want to bring it all into age and generation, but what I'm getting at is that when we're looking at appearance, when we're looking at, and I'm going to bring it back to the cosmetic surgery industry and even just the skin anti-aging industry as a whole, I myself struggle a little bit with it because I'm somewhere between that level of still kind of crunchy granola girl, doesn't do a lot. I don't wear makeup unless I absolutely feel like I have to wear it for something, but I love skincare. And so there's this interesting kind of connection, and I want to hear your thought process on that, because I'm guessing that there's a lot of people that also entertain cosmetic surgery and different types of procedures who aren't what we would stereotypically think of as a Kim Kardashian or something of that nature. And so bringing it back to the everyday person or the folks who are kind of like me who are halfway between that world. Can you speak a little bit about that and what kind of mental struggles there might be going on there in that aspect of things?
Yeah, it's complicated. It just is. It really is. If you read the book, you know, there's a chapter where I talk about some research, and you know, you write a book and you have to make all kinds of decisions throughout. How am I going to position this? You know, how much research do I want in the book? I'm a psychologist. I don't want it to seem like it's not written by a psychologist. So there should be some science basis to it. And yet most people are not as interested in research, and with good reason. Oftentimes research is slow getting to where we are and not relevant to, like in therapy, a lot of the time psychological research isn't helpful to me because they're discovering things that I've been working with clients on for like 15 years, but research takes time to develop, you know, if you're going to do it right. But one of the studies that I cited, I'm pretty sure it was from Finland, was called A Second Youth. And it was an interview study, qualitative study of small number of people, older people. And what they found was these people weren't like 75 trying to look 30. Mm-hmm. They were 75 wanting to look optimistic again because they felt optimistic. And people associate the way their eyes began to look with pessimism, you know, and tiredness. And they weren't tired. They were energetic. But people were treating them as though they were tired. And then it gets to real like nuts and bolts issues, like they didn't have a retirement that they were ready to turn to. So they had to keep working. And there's the real issue of discrimination. And then you get to what you were talking about. If your skin doesn't look as good, you know, how will people perceive you? You know, so it is really complicated. There are plenty of people who I talk with who, for instance, don't want to have a natural outcome to their cosmetic procedure. It's really important for me, if I'm going to be effective to them, to not, the term is pathologize them, not assume that that must be sickness if they want to look different than most people, you know? So it is really complicated. And what I say to clients is, you know, my job isn't to tell you how I evaluate you. My job is to hold up a mirror and help you find out what your truth is, find out what's right for you. There are a lot of people who look at people who have a bunch of piercings or tattoos or whatever, and you know, it would never be right for them. That doesn't mean, you know, there's not a right answer.
No, you know, that's fascinating that you're saying not pathologize, because I have heard from some of my patients who, and definitely the tattoos, piercings, some of that, they said they've definitely felt like they walk into a therapist's office and they feel like they're being judged in and of themselves in that department. You know, I think maybe it's a good time to kind of address that in terms of finding the right therapist too, finding someone that resonates with you as well, especially if you're going to enter the realm of assessment for cosmetic surgery in that case. And I'm saying assessment, no, because that's not what we're doing. It's more just like helping you find out if this is what you really want to do or not, I guess is probably where I'm going
For
down that
sure.
road.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, I think any therapist will talk with someone on the phone, you know, for 10 minutes or whatever. And that should give you some information. But sometimes you don't really know until you work with them for a session or two. And whenever someone comes to me that's been with a different therapist, I always am curious to hear whether they talked with that therapist about what didn't feel like it was fitting, because it really is helpful to do that. We think that we're going to be rude if we do that. And the truth is, some therapists who really are not skilled will not be able to get past taking it personally. You really have to not do that. That's one of the differences in training. Someone's had better training, and if they're more skilled as a clinician, they're helping a client get that therapy is a relationship that is unidirectional. I give, you receive. The only thing you give me is pay, money. That's it. You don't have to give me politeness. You don't have to give me honesty, really. But at some point, I'm gonna get wise to it, and we're gonna recognize, or at least you'll get wise to the fact that my help isn't applying to you because the person you're presenting to me isn't who you are. You know, so sometimes I have that talk with a client. You will be able to succeed in lying to me. I'm not an investigator. That's a different kind of activity.
No, I like that. I like that. I think it's important because I've talked to so many patients over the years that have been like, yeah, I just stay with my therapist because they kind of know me. And I'm like, well, is it effective? Are you getting what you need? I don't know. It's just routine. And I kind of go, well, you know, it's important to find someone, like you said, getting what you want out of the relationship. And I think right now, one of the hard things, and this is kind of where the industry is, and maybe post-COVID and whatnot, is it's hard to find therapists that are available this time, this day and age. And so I think that might be where that's coming from too. I don't know if you guys are having the same kind of issues in the LA area and in California as we do in Washington. I mean, I can't really find many therapists available anymore.
Yeah, it is hard. It is hard because there are so many stresses these days. So many people are struggling. We're really not finished with COVID. And we don't talk so much about Ukraine because it's so far away. But, you know, there's a major war going on in the world right now, you know, and that's in the news. And then you look at these police incidents. There's just a lot going on in society that's really upsetting. And we have a 24-hour news cycle now. You know, when I was growing up, you had like the 6 o'clock and the 11 o'clock news. And that was it, you know. And we really, oftentimes I'm talking with people about, you know, how many hours are you spending watching news? We talk about social media, but a lot of the time in the popular press, they don't talk about other media. You know, if you're watching anything, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, all day long, you're just getting the same ideas rehashed over and over again. And it can be really pretty depressing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've gotten to the point when my father likes to update me on everything. And I'm like, all right, what's the depressing news? You have 5 minutes. That's all we got for it today. And then we're done. I don't even have TV. I mean, we have TVs, but we stream if we're going to watch something, because I won't watch it anymore. I refuse. It kills you and rots you from inside. And it's hard. So that being said, you know, with all the different things that are going on and with all of our struggles, do you feel like you've been seeing more people lately who are turning inward and taking that feeling of discontent around them and kind of choosing to do things to try to make themselves feel better? Do you feel like there's an uprise in the cosmetic surgeries? Do you feel like there's an increase in all of that going on now?
Well, there's the data came out a couple months ago that a few years ago that the frequency was like 20 million procedures, non-invasive and invasive in the US alone. Mm-hmm. And I think they compared, I forgot, I want to say 2019 to 21. But anyway, post-COVID, we're at 30 million. Mm-hmm. And 20 million was a steady increase from like 15, 10 years ago. So there's no question people are doing it more. There's no question the procedures are better. They have shorter healing times. We know a lot more about that. And they can do amazing things. You know, there's this complex balance we have to strike. On the one hand, you know, they're not going to turn you into a new person against your will. You're going to have to work at it. On the other hand, the cosmetic work can do amazing things for people. And I think what you're pointing up to is this idea of, like, one of the things that I've heard some of your other podcasts that I'm totally in line with philosophically is this idea of making too much of the diagnostic labels. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want that. A lot of people are disappointed if they're not told that they're an addict, or if they're not told that you're a depressive, you know. Right. They feel like they paid for it. They want a label. Mm-hmm. You know, they're seeing a professional. Give me the label. And then what follows shortly after that, oftentimes with those people, is, and the pill. Mm-hmm. Let me get the right pill and then I'm done with this, you know. Let me fix the right thing on my face or my body, and then I'll feel better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not going to succeed because the problem is a lot more complex. I would say ultimately the problem is about people not wanting to be present with themselves. Mm-hmm. I had a client one time who was a poly substance abuser who said, you don't understand. He was talking about an acid trip that he had done in his backyard. And he said, you don't understand, the moon at night on acid is like unreal looking at it. And I said, well, you know, that really is our problem, right? I mean, we have to find a way to live with and even embrace the moon as it really is. Mm-hmm. But that's what people who are finding different ways of leaving, whether it's on a drug or on their app, or with worrying, or with anger, or with focusing on their appearance. There are all sorts of ways, or with work, you know, socially desirable ways that look good to everybody. You know, mm-hmm. being a workaholic isn't thought to be as much of a vice as being an alcoholic or a coke addict, but they're all addicted. They're all not present, you know? And so that's what, there was a powerful message in one of the other podcasts I listened to. This is really what mindfulness at its core is about. This is really what meditation at its core is about. It's about practicing staying, trying to recognize how often you're leaving.
Yeah.
Consumed in thoughts.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. The disconnecting, the leaving, the running, and looking for something different. I fully admit that I have lived in this realm for a long time. And throw, you know, you say the workaholic, throw yourself into business, then you don't have to worry about anything else. Yep. And I know a lot of folks fit into various categories in this department that don't, seem so like you said, workaholic versus alcoholic. I mean, honestly, it's the same thing. It's just a
Yeah.
different disconnect.
And
With
let me just say, I've had clients who do not want to hear that the label isn't helpful. They are not happy with me saying, this is more complicated than a label like you're an alcoholic. Because you see it time and again. There are people in AA, for instance, who, transform themselves into, really broadly speaking, healthy people. And there are other people in AA who are no longer alcoholics, but they are still really unhealthy in spirit. So even really effective programs like AA and other 12-step programs, it's up to the individual to really do the deep work.
Yeah, no, it and that's the key here is the deep work. Now, obviously it's not the easy route. We all know that. And that's why, a lot of people will have one surgery and then they'll go to the next surgery and then they'll go to the next surgery. And it also becomes now somewhat of an addiction. I have a question for you. What's the person that you've seen that's had the most surgeries? I mean, you don't have to say their name, obviously, but how many surgeries have you seen like top on someone who's still trying to work through things?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it'd be probably six or eight, something like that. But,
Wow.
that's just what they've told me.
Sure. Yeah, I've seen a few where I'm at like four or five with a couple of patients of mine, and yeah, and unfortunately, it's that underlying inner work. So, my next question becomes, what would be the first step? Obviously, the book, first step for folks, especially if you guys don't have a therapist that you're currently working with. But what would be the first step that we could have someone who's listening to this that maybe doesn't have a therapist or maybe is working with someone, they can start to just explore things.
Okay, maybe the best answer is just to start with the journaling exercise that appears at the beginning of the book, which is just about what changes do you hope to see in yourself? There's the obvious how I appear, but then there's how I feel, how I tend to think, how I tend to behave out in the world and even in my home. But then the next journaling exercise that piggybacks on that, a chapter or two later, is specifically, like, what changes do I hope to see in my friendships and at work and in my romantic life, in the clothes that I wear, my experience in social situations, what hobbies? Some of the things that do change for people are, what activities they can engage in. People would, I almost did a I was told you probably shouldn't do this TikTok video. I have TikTok videos. And I was advised, yeah, probably don't post that one. I had one that I still disagree. I didn't post it, but I think it's a really valuable idea, which is just pointing out the reality that there's really clear research. I bet you know this. You've probably talked about this with people because it's totally relevant to your field, that women who have larger breasts, regardless of whether they're heavy or not, of their body mass index, exercise less, and in particular jog less, because it's hard to find clothes that feel comfortable, that don't feel painful. Now there are much better compression garments that people can wear, but also because of how society treats them. And how what the experience is of exercise. So the point is, cosmetic procedures can definitely change these things. And if we use the journaling exercises, you can start to explore that within yourself. I made the book because therapy is like once a week usually, and people need a tool the rest of the time. And so the book is intended to help people hold that mirror up to themselves more of the time and explore what's going on for them, and then bring that material back to the therapy so we can talk about it. So that's the start. The start is, let's just try and understand, if you were to change yourself, what it would accomplish. Because the last thing I'll say about it is, what I would say to them then is, okay, great. I'm not here to talk. I'm not here to talk you out of a procedure, but are there ways you can start to implement changes to start accomplishing these things now? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe you can start wearing different clothes. Maybe you can start behaving differently with your friends. Maybe you can start talking to yourself differently. The irony that I talk about in the book at one point is, in order to change yourself, you're going to need to embrace yourself. Mm-hmm. The change happens as a reaction to a process. You have to dedicate yourself to the change process, and that means caring about yourself. That means embracing and respecting yourself as you are now, ironically, even if you want to change yourself.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely valuable information. And this is what I was hoping you would say, so that folks could hear that and really embrace it. I, oddly enough, am a smaller person that has very large breasts, that yes, running is a problem. And I have entertained because of the upper back pain, you know, having surgery. When I was going through your book, it's kind of funny you mentioned that, because I was actually thinking about myself and my relationship with, you know, having some painful issues with running. I still do it. And, you know, even with the most fortified clothing, we can still have rubs and bleeding and all kinds of crazy stuff, depending on how far you run and what kind of environments. And so you do tend to think about that as, you know, okay, I'm going to feel so much better with that. But then you start to get into, and this is kind of where I noticed in the book, in a couple of the meditations, and I wanted to chat about some of the meditations, this is where I'm going, is that I kind of got into some of the meditations and I was like, but they're my friends. I've had them since, you know, puberty. And I started to go, well, no, I don't want to lose them, because I like them in some cases. And so it was an interesting evolution in my head from the beginning, where I was like, well, yeah, I've thought about having breast reduction surgery. And then I went into a meditation where my brain was like, they're your friends. And so anyway, let's talk about some of the meditations that you have, because you guys, he has a ton of them in here. And I was playing with a few of them, but we had mentioned one in particular. So let's talk about meditation, and how that can help us to really connect inward and let the voice from our body and ourselves, our inner voice, come out a little bit better.
Yeah, sure. I let me piggyback on what you said just for a second, because it's so rich. Because, you know, the opposite issue of implants. Mm-hmm. This is something that sometimes we talk about in therapy. That, again, I'm not here to talk someone out of anything, but if you're going to have breast implants, have you thought about how that might affect your exercise mm-hmm. regimen? You know, mm-hmm. I think it's thought now the second most common cosmetic procedure is removal mm-hmm. of implants in this recent research that came out.
Yes.
Part of that is because of the cancer risk that they found, but I think another part of it is probably comfort mm-hmm. and lifestyle. So the meditations, there are different types of meditations. The one that I think is especially powerful, a lot of people haven't heard of, is a kind of a Tonglen meditation. It's a version of it. I feel like saying that because I always say to people, I'm not here as a Buddhist teacher. You know, I don't, that's not my training, but I can use the meditations. It's not outside of my scope of expertise to use the meditations. And the Tonglen meditation is, I use it a little bit differently than the way that I was taught it. It can be a really powerful meditation for gratitude. We know that gratitude is a really powerful thing in helping to counteract depressive feelings. So the depression is about sadness. It lies on a continuum, like any psychological problem. We can be, you know, a little bit depressed, or we can be very depressed. But it's really about sadness, about loss. It's about deficit in my life. I don't feel like I can be happy because I'm missing certain things. And so a gratitude exercise, that's why it helps people not feel so sad, because it directly attacks the problem, because it reminds you of the things that there are in your life to be grateful for. And effective therapy is really about perspective. It's not about lying to yourself that, bad things are really good. It's about seeing the bad things, but reminding yourself that you really can counterbalance your perception by seeing all of it, So a Tonglen meditation has the person, and I have one on YouTube, focus on some source of struggle that they're experiencing, and you sit with your breathing and your feelings about that source of struggle, and you recognize it and have compassion for yourself because of it. Could be something physical, an illness or something wrong with your body. It could be spiritual, like a betrayal that you've experienced, or a loss. Maybe someone broke up with you. Maybe someone's left you. And you feel really badly about yourself, and you really don't feel like you're going to find someone else. So you sit with those feelings. And the next step is you come back to your awareness of your breathing and presence in the moment. And then you focus on some sources of comfort that you have access to. And they can be anything. The friends that are in your life, the activities that you engage in, your work, whatever you're aware helps you get away from the sadness. And focus on your gratitude that you have access to that, and how the comfort it does bring you, how you do have moments of comfort because of that. Then you come back to being present in the room again. And now you think about, broadly speaking, the struggle that you started to focus on is something that is human. All around the world, there are probably people who are struggling with some physical ailment that's causing them to feel in some of the ways you're feeling. Maybe because it's the exact same ailment, but maybe because it's just another physical ailment, or the emotional one we were talking about, like betrayal or loss of a relationship. There must be thousands and thousands of people around the world who are struggling in the same way. So you get in touch with your compassion for them. And then what you do is, again, you're sitting with your breathing. Anytime you're meditating, you're noticing your breath. And what you can do is, on the inhale, imagine that you're breathing in the pain that those people are feeling. And with every exhale, you're blowing out the wish that they will get access to some source of comfort, like the ones that you've had access to. And so it's integrating this idea, which we use in Eastern approaches like Buddhism, that really we're all in this together. We're all just struggling to get through. People are suffering and struggling all over the world. But then you're also reminding yourself that you really do have things to be grateful for.
I like that.
So it's ultimately a gratitude meditation.
I like it. I think it brings a little more depth to the gratitude, because a lot of folks talk about gratitude. And I found that when I do it, it's like, thanks for this. Thanks. I sound like a 5-year-old, like, thank you for my crayons, and I'm like, that doesn't connect me to something. And this is much deeper. It gives you kind of a connection to the universe, connection to other people. And even just, I guess for lack of a better term, a blessing to other folks, a goodwill to other folks, which I'm all about helping others. And I think a lot of people really deep down do want to connect and help others. And I like how this one puts together the gratitude in a way that's much more functional than just like sitting there. I grew up Catholic, and I'd have to go to confession, and sitting there and trying to come up with something is what gratitude sometimes feels like for me. I'm trying to come up with something. And so I don't know if I am alone in that, but
no, you're not. And it's a great example. I'm glad we're talking about this, because it's a great example of how people can be so abusive toward themselves, because there are clients who react with anger at the idea of gratitude exercises, because what it feels like is a weapon, and it's used that way sometimes. What are you bitching about? You have so much to be grateful for. Do you know how tough people have it? And you're complaining. Stop your whining. You know? So we can find ways to turn things into weapons against ourselves. And it's not what that gratitude exercise should be about. It should be about compassion, that there's room to have compassion for those other people who are struggling and for yourself.
I love it. I love it. I agree that it can be turned definitely to gratitude. There's other things I could do. We could probably talk for hours about other things that we could turn as weapons to ourselves, especially in the health and healing space. But yeah, that is a huge point. Okay, folks, gotta remember that one. So my goodness, we talked about so many things. And like I said before, I probably could talk to Dr. Allen for hours and hours and hours. And I just might do that over time. But guys, you gotta check out the book. I literally went through it, like I had said, thinking about my intent to try to have a breast reduction. And by the end of it, I was like, no, nah, I'm keeping my friends. They're staying. And you know, obviously, like Dr. Allen said, this book isn't meant to talk you out of anything, but it's definitely meant to have you connect to yourself and really get deep in there as to what's going on. Because here's another fun tidbit. My best friend just had a breast reduction last fall, and she kept telling me like it's the best thing ever. You just got to go do it, you know. And so in your head, you get these things in your head, and this may be someone else right now might be listening to that. So Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind, you guys, by Dr. Allen Goodwin, definitely got to check it out, especially if you've ever entertained the thought of changing your body in any way. It really does help you connect to what is going on internally for you, and what's your connection with this thought?
And it
So,
is about therapy. I hope people get that also from it. You know, I had therapist friends of mine read it before it was on sale and say, I really think you should think about changing the title and changing the focus, because this is a book about therapy and how we can change in therapy. So, but I decided not to, because the core of it is cosmetic procedures, but you know, how you treat yourself, the way you look, and how therapy can affect those is really what it's about.
No, I found it to be extremely helpful for, you know, yes, the one thing that I went into it for, but also a plethora of resources to really connect to your inner self and really identify with my theme that I kind of repeat over and over again, is that you have everything within you to heal yourself. You really, truly do. And I'm just, you know, happy to have someone else that's echoing the sentiment. And really, you know, we had mentioned before how it is hard to find therapists right now. And no matter what you're struggling with, perhaps Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind could be helpful just to help you move to the next step of just connecting with yourself.
I intend it to be a resource that's fun to read, but that also gives you real information.
Absolutely. It did for me. I passed it on. I do have it right now still, but because I had to get it back before our interview, but I passed it on to my girlfriend that had the breast reduction surgery. And she was like, wow, this stuff's great. Like, because now she does have a little bit of questions about what she's done. So it's interesting, you know, just getting the perspective. But I, as a doc, will definitely be referring it to my patients as well. Like I said before, Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind. Great book to help you if you are contemplating anything that has to do with cosmetic surgery, but also just looking for some connection to your inner self. Thank you so much
Thank
again.
you, Janine. It's really fun talking with you. Thanks a lot.
We'll do it again soon. If you want to learn more about Dr. Allen Goodwin, head over to DrAlan Goodwin, GoodWin.com, and definitely check out his book, Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind. I highly recommend it. Hey, fellow health junkie, thanks for listening to the Health Fix Podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.